Thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
You're welcome.
Now, last year when we had you on the show in June, the topic was focused on suicide contagion following celebrity suicides. Now, how might the grief of losing a loved one closer to oneself be different to that of a celebrity death?
Look, with both losing someone close to you to suicide and also a celebrity suicide, there's actually some similarities. If people feel really close or identify very strongly with a loved one or with a celebrity, and seeing that they've died by suicide, particularly around after the act or an anniversary, that impact can often lead to people having stronger ideation as a result.
Of course. American news media have reported that both teachers and students alike struggle with survivor's guilt. Now, what is survivor's guilt and how does this affect suicide risk?
Look, in terms of survivor's guilt, I would probably look at more around the issue around the complexities of suicide. There's not one thing. There's usually a multiple issues that usually someone's facing. They may have lived with the vulnerability or the ideation for a while. And when we look at issues around whether someone's been in a, well, I can't speak for the actual incidents you're referring to with the mass shootings, but if we look at traumatic incidents someone experiences, whether or not it's a family member that dies by suicide or a natural disaster or another form of group traumatic event, people are going to feel something on, particularly around anniversaries, where they're maybe start reliving the moment, the trauma of the moment. And what we need to do as a community is understand that people will be going through feelings of psychological distress, and we want to normalize that people do reach out and seek help. They don't have to have that self-stigma, that feeling like I don't want to share how I'm feeling. So it's really important we send out a message that people can reach out on anniversaries, and also that the community can be a support. So through that, what they can do is, particularly if we're worried about people that, for instance, that may be feeling vulnerable to suicide, if that's one of the issues that someone's facing, is that they can visit something like the Life in Mind National Digital Gateway for Suicide Prevention and typing "You Can Talk," and there's a range of resources that people can familiarize themselves with and how to have those difficult conversations. It's really important that people don't do nothing. It's really important that people do ask that question, how are you feeling? Do you want to talk? And if they say they're not okay, it's really important that there's tips and resources on how to respond. And these can be from listening without judgment, not actually having to have the solutions to someone on how they're feeling. But also we want to make sure that people who are feeling a distress, that there is pathways to support. There's crisis support services such as Lifeline, Beyond Blue, and for young people under 25, there's Kids Helpline, but also online, there's eHeadspace. So it's really important that we give people this choice, we encourage and normalize help-seeking behavior. But we do recognize that anniversaries are significantly stressing time. Grief and loss is a really important healing process, and we validate that grief is real, and going through those processes are part of that healing process, and people should be open to acknowledge that.
Of course. Now, PTSD, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder, like grief, certainly has its long-term effects, as what was we were talking about with anniversaries. News reported the two Parkland survivors who sadly took their life. It happened after the first year mark of the shooting. Now, do you think the anniversaries of traumatic events pose as an increased suicide risk?
Most definitely. So if we look at in many natural disasters or other traumatic group events, at that moment, people come together, they're supporting each other. And so there's a lot of resilience and connectivity that happens in that immediate aftermath. So there's actually a lot of protective factors happening. People feel supported. But what happens is a year later, 2 years later, on those anniversaries, they start reliving the moment, the pain, the experiences that they had, and different levels of distress. And when it becomes more harmful, if it's particularly things around PTSD, is that we want to make sure that people are seeking help and support. And we see this with other traumatic events, is that 3-4 years later, there isn't that big support group around that person. So we want to make sure that in the future, and we've been doing this with suicide prevention trial sites around the country, and some of our training of building preparedness for the community, is that when they do have natural disasters, and we had this in Townsville recently where they had the flood, they were treating that as an opportunity for suicide prevention. And so the Operation Compass suicide prevention campaign, which is called Check Your Mates, they disseminated the Check Your Mate resources on how to look out for someone who's doing it tough. So we don't have to talk about the word suicide. We can actually talk about protective factors. What can people do to look out for people and to encourage? And what they will do is they'll look at the anniversaries of the floods in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, and that campaign and those approaches will be enacting in their strategies locally on supporting the community through any psychological distress that they may be feeling now, but also in the years to come.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be so many really great programs that go towards helping people in that kind of situation, which is really fantastic. So how do you think we as a community can further provide like mental health support to those suffering from survivor's guilt and PTSD and help them adjust back into society?
Look, many people living with whether it's mental health conditions, issues, or mental ill health, they actually are already in the community. And what we need to do is there's different levels that people may feel and different levels of self-stigma. So as a community, if we can normalize help-seeking behavior to optimize public, mental health for everyone, and also to educate ourselves, not just always that a clinician can be there to have those conversations with people, that people in the community can educate themselves on how to support someone when they're doing it tough. So there's mental health first aid, there's assist training, there's QPR, which is question, persuade, response. The Black Dog Institute are running nationally. It's a 30-minute online course where you go through how to spot warning signs, how to respond in helpful ways to someone who's doing it tough. And again, you can get access to these resources if you visit the Life in Mind website. You can gain access to these resources. I'd also say there's also Head to Health, which is the government's national digital gateway for mental health digital support tools, that people can go onto that website, familiarize themselves with information that's there. But again, I can't stress that talking to someone you trust is really important. You can reach out to someone you trust and then talk to your GP and or call a crisis support service if you're feeling vulnerable or not safe.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Mark. It's been fantastic having you on the show to talk about this.
Thank you for having me.